Welcome back to the Mbaga Media Health Podcast. Today, we're diving deep into a topic that's becoming increasingly critical for self-insured employers: alternative funding programs for specialty drugs.
That's right, host. Specialty drugs are incredibly expensive, often used for chronic or rare conditions, and they're a huge driver of healthcare costs. Employers are really feeling the pinch, which has led to the rise of these alternative programs promising big savings.
Exactly. The core promise is quite striking: significant cost savings, sometimes even claiming drugs are obtained for free or at a steep discount. They often do this by sourcing drugs outside the traditional pharmacy benefit manager, or PBM, networks. It sounds like a dream come true for employers facing budget pressures.
It really does sound appealing on the surface. Who wouldn't want to slash the cost of the most expensive medications? But as we know in healthcare, if something sounds too good to be true, there's usually a lot more to the story. And that's precisely what we're seeing here.
You hit the nail on the head. Beneath the shiny surface of cost savings, a more complex and frankly, concerning reality is emerging. Experts are describing the methods used by these programs as sneaky, and they often operate in a murky gray zone where ethical and legal boundaries are blurred.
And the biggest red flag, of course, is the potential impact on patients. While employers might see financial benefits, the primary concern has to be patient safety and the quality of care. That's where the true story of these alternative funding programs really begins to unfold.
Let's start by understanding the traditional pathway versus this alternative route. In the standard model, an employer works with a PBM, which then manages the drug benefit, often using a network of contracted specialty pharmacies. This system, in theory, ensures access, manages costs through rebates, and provides oversight.
Right. The PBM acts as a central manager. But with alternative funding programs, or AFPs, the employer might contract directly with the AFP provider. This provider then handles the sourcing and dispensing, often cutting out the PBM completely. This disintermediation is key to their model.
Instead of going through the PBM's established network and pricing, the AFP looks for different avenues. This could mean direct negotiations with manufacturers, sourcing from international pharmacies, or even leveraging manufacturer-patient assistance programs, or PAPs, in ways they weren't originally intended. These PAPs are meant for uninsured or underinsured patients, not as a primary source for employer plans.
And that's where the claim of getting drugs for free often comes from. It's not that the drug is magically free, but the AFP might secure such substantial rebates or financial incentives that the net cost to the program, and thus the employer, is drastically reduced, sometimes appearing to be near zero.
It's a clever financial maneuver, no doubt. But by cutting out the PBM, these AFPs also circumvent the PBM's fees, their negotiated rebates, and their utilization oversight. The PBM, which is supposed to be a gatekeeper for cost and appropriate use, is effectively sidelined.
And this is precisely where the patient impact and the ethical quandaries begin to surface. If the employer saves money, but the patient experience is compromised, that's a huge problem. Let's talk about the patient impact specifically.
The concerns here are significant. One of the most immediate disruptions for patients is the forced switching of pharmacies. Patients often build strong relationships with their specialty pharmacies, which provide crucial support beyond just dispensing medication.
Absolutely. These specialty pharmacies often have nurses to help with injections, educators for complex treatments, and case managers to navigate insurance. When a patient is forced to switch to an unfamiliar AFP pharmacy, they lose that continuity of care and specialized support system.
This disruption can directly impact medication adherence, which is absolutely critical for specialty drugs. Delays in receiving medications due to new, unfamiliar processes or sourcing issues can have severe consequences for patients managing chronic or life-threatening conditions.
Imagine a patient with a debilitating autoimmune disease relying on a weekly injection. If that medication is delayed because the new AFP pharmacy is struggling to source it, or if the patient can't figure out the new refill system, their condition can worsen. This can lead to increased pain, more doctor visits, and potentially more aggressive, costly treatments down the line.
And beyond just disruptions, there are profound concerns about the quality and safety of the drugs themselves when sourced through these alternative channels. Traditional specialty pharmacies adhere to strict regulations, but sourcing from unvetted international pharmacies introduces major risks.
Exactly. These foreign pharmacies may not be subject to the same rigorous FDA oversight. This raises concerns about the authenticity, purity, dosage, and proper storage of the medications. The risk of counterfeit drugs, expired medications, or drugs compromised by improper handling during transit is very real.
Similarly, while compounding pharmacies have their place, they operate under different regulatory frameworks. There can be concerns about the consistency and safety of certain compounded drugs, especially when they're used as a substitute for FDA-approved specialty medications. It's a different ballgame entirely.
And crucially, when drugs are sourced outside the manufacturer's direct distribution channels, patients often lose access to invaluable manufacturer-provided support programs. These programs offer direct patient support, educational resources, and dedicated assistance that are integral to managing specialty drug therapies successfully.
Losing that support can leave patients feeling isolated and ill-equipped. While specific adverse events might not always make headlines, the potential for harm stemming from non-standard drug sourcing is a significant worry for many healthcare professionals. This naturally leads us into the ethical quagmires.
These patient-centered harms absolutely lead to a dilution of ethical practice. Is it truly saving money if the cost is borne by the patient's well-being, safety, and quality of life? It creates a stark conflict between an employer's fiduciary duty to manage costs and their fundamental responsibility for employee welfare.
Imagine being on a critical specialty medication, something that keeps you functional or alive, and then finding out your access is being rerouted through an unknown, unvetted channel just to save the company money. It really makes you question the priorities within our healthcare system.
And this gray zone isn't just an ethical concern, it's a significant legal and regulatory minefield. The legality of these programs is far from settled, and they often operate in a space where compliance is ambiguous. A major question mark hangs over their adherence to ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
ERISA has strict requirements for plan administration and fiduciary duties. It's unclear if all AFP structures fully comply with these mandates. Plus, these programs can run afoul of state pharmacy laws, which vary greatly. Importing drugs or sourcing from pharmacies not licensed in a state is often questionable.
Some AFPs might engage in practices that skirt the edges of legal permissibility, creating a precarious situation. There have been instances where regulatory bodies or legal challenges have scrutinized these programs to clarify their operational boundaries and ensure patient protection.
The contractual relationships are also incredibly complex and often opaque. The agreements between employers and AFP providers can be dense, with fine print that may not adequately disclose the risks. This raises questions about who bears the ultimate liability if something goes wrong.
Exactly. Is it the employer, the AFP provider, or someone else? The lack of clarity adds another layer of risk. Now, let's look at how the industry is responding, particularly the role of PBMs in all of this.
PBMs are certainly not standing idly by. They are increasingly implementing contractual clauses to prevent or limit the utilization of these AFPs by employers who contract with them. This creates a real push and pull dynamic.
And PBMs are also actively developing and promoting their own cost-saving strategies. They aim to provide employers with financial relief while maintaining a higher degree of control over drug quality, safety, and patient access. They want to show they can compete.
As regulators, courts, and the industry grapple with these new models, the future of specialty drug access remains in flux. The broader implications extend beyond just financial transactions. They have the potential to erode trust within the entire healthcare ecosystem.
For employees, discovering that their employer might be prioritizing cost savings over the quality and safety of their critical medications can lead to deep distrust. It can strain the employer-employee relationship significantly.
This situation highlights the urgent need for more sustainable and transparent solutions to the high cost of specialty drugs. While AFPs are one controversial approach, the focus should ultimately be on strategies that genuinely align cost containment with patient well-being.
This could involve exploring value-based purchasing models, where payment is tied to outcomes, not just volume. Greater price negotiation and transparency throughout the supply chain are also essential. And enhancing patient support systems within traditional PBM structures is key.
Let's transition to the idea of value over cost. This tension between financial metrics and human health is central to the conversation. We've discussed how AFPs operate and their financial appeal, but the patient-centered concerns are paramount.
Exactly. The conversation has been dominated by cost for too long. But cost alone is a blunt instrument. What we should be striving for is value, the health outcomes achieved per dollar spent. AFPs, by focusing solely on cost, often neglect the value proposition.
If a program saves an employer money but leads to adverse events, treatment interruptions, or health decline due to compromised sourcing or support, then the true value is lost. In fact, the long-term costs of these negative outcomes could far outweigh the initial savings.
From an employer's perspective, the hidden costs can be substantial: increased absenteeism, decreased morale, reduced productivity, and the very real risk of legal liability and reputational damage if patient safety issues arise.
This is where the role of the PBM, despite its criticisms, becomes clearer. A functioning PBM acts as a crucial intermediary, balancing cost-effectiveness with quality and safety. They have vetted networks and provide oversight designed to ensure appropriate, safe, and effective medications.
When AFPs bypass this oversight, they remove a critical layer of protection for the patient and, by extension, for the employer. Let's consider a specific example to illustrate this.
Imagine a patient with a rare autoimmune disorder needing a complex biologic infusion. They've been receiving it at a specialized center with a dedicated specialty pharmacy coordinating everything. Then, the employer switches to an AFP.
The AFP, seeking savings, sources the drug internationally and has the patient receive the infusion at a non-specialized clinic. What could go wrong? The international pharmacy might not meet U.S. quality standards, the drug could be improperly stored, or the patient could have a severe reaction at an unfamiliar clinic.
The original specialty pharmacy, which understood the patient's full treatment history, is no longer involved, potentially leading to missed drug interactions or monitoring protocols. The employer saves money on the drug, but the cost of an ER visit or prolonged hospitalization could be astronomical.
This isn't hypothetical. These are the risks healthcare professionals worry about. The narrative of AFPs, cutting out the middleman, often ignores the essential functions these intermediaries serve, like aggregating purchasing power and providing standardization.
And the concept of free drugs needs scrutiny. If an AFP obtains a drug at a significantly reduced net cost, that cost has been shifted. It's often through deep rebates or volume commitments that can distort the market and incentivize pushing a particular drug, not necessarily the most clinically appropriate one.
This brings us to physician autonomy and patient choice. When AFPs dictate how a patient receives medication, it can undermine the physician-patient relationship. A physician's prescription based on clinical expertise can be overridden by an AFP's sourcing decisions.
Patients can feel disempowered, becoming recipients of a system driven by financial incentives that may not align with their best interests. The lack of transparency is perhaps the most pervasive issue, making it hard for employers to fulfill their fiduciary duties responsibly.
And the fact that these programs operate in a gray zone is often by design, exploiting regulatory loopholes. The importation of drugs is heavily regulated by the FDA, and using international pharmacies as a primary channel for employee plans can be legally dubious.
State-level pharmacy regulations are also complex. Operating across multiple states without proper licensure or adherence to specific laws can lead to significant compliance issues. The question of ERISA compliance, with its emphasis on acting solely in the interest of plan participants, remains a major point of contention.
Let's revisit the industry's response, especially from PBMs. They are actively pushing back against AFPs. Many PBM contracts now include clauses that prohibit employers from utilizing alternative funding programs or sourcing drugs outside the PBM's network.
This effectively forces employers to choose between their PBM and an AFP. PBMs are also investing heavily in their own cost containment strategies, like enhanced rebate negotiation and broader specialty pharmacy networks, to show they can achieve savings without the risks.
This creates a dynamic where the market is being reshaped by these competing forces. Employers are caught in the middle, seeking cost relief but becoming increasingly aware of the potential downsides of these alternative programs.
The broader societal impact is also worth contemplating. If the trend towards circumventing established, regulated systems for cost savings continues, it could lead to a fragmentation of the healthcare system, creating a two-tiered approach to care.
This is antithetical to the goals of equitable access to healthcare. It really underscores the need to find solutions that are not only affordable but also safe, transparent, and patient-centric.
So, to wrap up, the allure of significant cost savings through alternative funding programs is understandable. However, as we've explored, this allure often masks a complex web of risks and ethical compromises. The promise of free or heavily discounted specialty drugs comes with a profound potential cost borne by patients.
The journey from the initial promise of cost reduction to the reality of patient safety, ethical considerations, and legal ambiguities is a stark reminder of healthcare's challenges. While financial efficiency is a legitimate concern, it must never overshadow the fundamental responsibility to safeguard individual health and well-being.
What does a responsible approach look like then? It's not about accepting the status quo of high specialty drug costs, but about seeking solutions that are sustainable, transparent, and patient-centric. This means prioritizing value-based care over pure cost containment.
Absolutely. Moving beyond a cost containment mindset to one that rewards effective treatments and positive patient outcomes is crucial. This involves exploring models where drug manufacturers are reimbursed based on how well their medications work.
Enhancing transparency is also key. Employers need to understand where their medications are coming from, how they're sourced, and what quality controls are in place. Both PBMs and AFP providers should be held to a higher standard of transparency.
And strengthening regulatory oversight is vital. Policymakers and regulatory bodies need to actively monitor and update regulations to address the evolving landscape of drug procurement, ensuring robust enforcement and closing loopholes.
We also need to invest in comprehensive patient support. Specialty drugs require education, adherence programs, and access to clinical expertise. These are integral to successful treatment and shouldn't be sacrificed for cost savings.
Finally, fostering collaboration among employers, PBMs, manufacturers, physicians, and patient advocacy groups is essential to find common ground and develop solutions that benefit everyone, with patient well-being always at the forefront.
The conversation around alternative funding programs, while framed in financial terms, is ultimately a conversation about our values and the kind of healthcare system we want to build for the future. And in that conversation, the well-being of the patient must always be the guiding principle.
Well said, host. It's a complex issue with no easy answers, but by prioritizing transparency, safety, and patient outcomes, we can navigate this labyrinth more responsibly. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Thank you for joining us. We've covered the introduction, all five sections, the conclusion, and the detailed summary. That's all the time we have for today on Bago Media Health. We'll see you next time.